it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
He is Brian Robb from MassLive.com. He is Jay King from The Athletic, live in Memphis. And I am Sam Jam Packard, and together we are Still Potable! That's right, folks. Late night Still Potable coming to you in the early Monday morning, late Sunday evening. This is the free episode of Still Potable. We are a Monday through Friday podcast. If you enjoy what you're listening to, please subscribe to us on patreon.com/stillpotable. You'll get every single podcast Tuesday through Thursday. This is the free episode we release every single Monday. And we are coming to you after what was, I think, the ugliest Celtics game of the season. One in which they probably had no business winning. One in which had one of the crazier endings I've seen in a recent basketball game. Jay, you were live there in Memphis. What the hell happened out there?
Madness. The last sequence was just total insanity. The Celtics have the ball with like a 1 second differential between the shot clock and the game clock, and for some reason decide to go for a dunk. I don't know why.
You say the Celtics like it was a collective team decision. No, this was Drew Holiday.
There were two people. It was Jason Tatum who threw the ball to Drew Holiday. He must have known that Drew Holiday was going to try to put that in the bucket. And then Drew Holiday goes up for a dunk with Jaren Jackson, the defensive player of the year, in the vicinity. Kind of a wild decision, but and then at the other end, Santi Aldama gets a very good look. His 15th three-point attempt of the night, which is kind of wild. And he misses. Zaire Williams gets the rebound. Kristaps Porzingis blocks him and then reacts in such a way that he said he thought he should have probably apologized afterwards.
Like he was insulted that he tried a buzzer, a beating shot, or a game-tying shot. That's the way Kristaps reacted. Like he was mad that he dared try to shoot that over him.
No, you know, I think from what Kristaps said, my take was that he said something about how he got fouled on the play, and Kristaps was like, man, that was clean. In his head, he was thinking, man, that was clean. I got fouled a bunch of times. They called some borderline fouls on me. Why are you complaining? And so he said something to Zaire Williams and looked at him all angry. And it was good times. But the rest of the game, not such good times. It was ugly.
B-Rob, I mean, the Celtics lost the turnover battle by 5, lost the offensive rebound battle by 5, lost the kind of three-point attempts by 5. This is not a game in which the math was working for them, and they somehow managed to pull it out. What was your reaction to this kind of, I would say, nonsense basketball game?
Yeah, it was just a wild game from, because we haven't seen like a helter-skelter game like this, I think, all year long from this team. And it was no more than to me, just, you know, over the course of the game and even post game, like Joe Mazzulla in his post game press conference to you guys on there in Memphis, like saying like, yeah, we were like outworked, you know, effort wasn't there as much as we'd wanted. And he was kind of, for him, that was pretty much as, you know, blunt as he'll get about his players on that front, I think. And then on top of that, he straight up pulled Tatum and Jaylen Brown from the game with 7 minutes left in the third quarter together and sat him out 7 straight minutes together with Drew Holiday there, which I think, I don't know if like has he ever done that before, guys, in a close game? I feel like
was that an official benching? Was that like a I don't like your effort to start the third quarter?
I don't know. So he basically said his explanation on it was that they weren't playing very well. He wanted he said he's wanted to try to get a different identity going. And it was the first leg of a back-to-back, so he wanted to limit their minutes too. So I don't know if it was a pure benching or just like, these guys aren't playing that well. We're better off not playing them 40 minutes no matter what. Let's just try something else, see what happens. He kind of threw some darts. He threw Lamar Stevens in there. He threw Nemias Queta in there. It was kind of a weird rotation game for the Celtics, not their usual gang. It was Queta's first minutes for Boston. Lamar hasn't been in the rotation really at all. So I don't think Mazzulla was happy with the team, though. If he'd been happy, he probably would have kept those guys in or put them back in quicker. He was not thrilled with the execution. And especially, I think he was mad that they forced some things at the rim. They only took 31 three-pointers, which is super low for them. And the Grizzlies have been allowing a ton of three-pointers. So that was kind of a sign of just how poorly the Celtics attacked that defense at times.
It felt like the Grizzlies were doing or taking more of a concerted effort to try and close out on threes, but you still think with the starting lineup the Grizzlies ran out there with like seemingly four centers that the Celtics would be able to kind of get the shots that they wanted. But they really dominated points in the paint, especially early on in this game. I think in the first quarter, they had 18 of their 26 points were points in the paint, then 33 points in the paint at halftime. But the disparity in threes is just kind of wild, where the Celtics shot 31 threes. So basically, Santi Aldama took half as much as the Celtics took for the entire game. Grizzlies shot 44. And the Grizzlies shot 95 shots in this game and only scored 100 points. I don't think the Celtics' defense was amazing. There were certainly plenty of opportunities for Aldama to take that many open shots. Desmond Bain scored 30 points, and it felt like he was really getting a lot of space, especially kind of attacking the Celtics in pick and roll when I thought when Kristaps was in the game. But luckily for the Celtics, the Grizzlies don't have many other guys who can put the biscuit in the basket because other than Aldama, Jackson, and Bain, no one really else on the Grizzlies scored any points. And I guess, B-Rob, what'd you think of their defensive effort? And why was it, I don't want to say poor, because they did hold the Grizzlies to like I said, 100 points on 95 shots. Like, that seems a pretty wild.
And just 38.9% shooting.
Like, so it's like relatively good statistics efficiently, but didn't feel like there was like a high intensity effort there. And it did feel like Bane could generate a lot of looks when he wanted to.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely had his way for much of the night, no matter who was guarding him. The Grizz crushed the Celtics a lot in the offensive glass tonight. And I think honestly, when they did score a lot of the time, like it came off a bad Celtics offense where it'd be one on three or just, you know, a poor rim read or just a poor passing decision. And that was the stuff that got Celtics into trouble. I think by and large, they played pretty well in the half court when they were engaged. But when they were beat in transition or just like, you know, gave up easy runouts, that's where they ran into trouble there. So it's a situation where I think when you look after this game, what like where the issues were in this game in terms of the lackluster performance from a Celtics standard this year, I think it's you look at the offensive end more so than, you know, what was going on defensively there.
Tatum didn't take a three until the second half.
Yeah.
And only took one the whole game. That was just
bizarre. But he made it. But he made it.
That's and it was a pretty big one too.
Yeah.
And then I thought Porzingis was just really helpful. To have him against switches is just such a nice luxury for the Celtics to have. It's so different than it was last year when they could really stagnate against switching. And not that their offense was good tonight, but I thought he saved them from even worse offense. There was one play, Desmond Bane was on him, and he just like took his time, bodied up, and shot over the top of Desmond Bane's head. Just didn't even try to do anything else. Just like got strong, created not even really any space, just decided I'm a foot taller than this dude, this really muscular dude. Let me just shoot it over his head, and did it.
I feel like they got away from him in the second half, though. Like, he did a lot of his damage in the first quarter, and then I thought the team's offense just was not that efficient. And it felt like, especially with they're running Kenny Lofton Jr. out there, they're like Aldama was playing center at
times.
Don't
you dare besmirch Kenneth Lofton.
I did not besmirch him at all. Yes, I could have said,
you,
I could have said,
the way
lots
you said
of
it,
things.
They're running Kenny Lofton out there.
He is shorter than Kristaps Porzingis. Is he not? Is he not?
Basically, everyone is shorter than Kristaps Porzingis.
Oh, so maybe they should use Kristaps Porzingis in the second half and use that size advantage, something I don't think they did, especially when Biombo and Jaren Jackson Jr. were in foul trouble. I don't think they like kind of went to Kristaps as well as they did. Kind of late in that game against the Raptors. It just didn't feel like it felt like there was something that was a point of emphasis for them early. And Kristaps had a huge first quarter. I think 16 of his 26 points were in that first half. I don't think they went to him as well or as efficiently in that second half, where he scored 10 points, but six of those points were from deep. Like, going to Kristaps on the inside, it didn't seem like it was something they really did with ease in the second half.
He had a lot of blocks.
Well, yeah, that's the other end of the court, Jay, but thank you.
He had a lot of blocks. And, I mean, that was one of the reasons they were able to hold the Grizzlies to 38.9% shooting, is Kristaps just erased a lot of opportunities. We talk about the Celtics' rim reads, but I thought Memphis's were pretty bad, too. And that's a super depleted Memphis team. They're down
like so many guys.
Good players. Yeah, like
eight guys.
Eight guys, maybe.
Yeah, like five of their seven best players, including Ja Morant, Marcus Smart, Steven Adams, Brandon Clark.
Luke Kennard.
That is just a team that is just bare bones right now. And they're playing on the second leg of a back-to-back. So to be out-hustled by that team is pretty disappointing. And I think that's one of the reasons why Joe Mazzulla was a lot more upset about tonight's win than he was about the win against the Raptors. Against the Raptors, he thought, you know, they didn't have their best game execution-wise, but they were playing hard. They executed down the stretch. Tonight, I felt like he thought there weren't many redeeming qualities to this win at all.
Except for the win part. The win part was pretty redeeming.
Yeah, but I don't think he's really concerned with that. I mean, obviously, you'd rather come away with a win and move to 11-2 and have the NBA's best record and all that. They're on a six-game winning streak, so to be a little negative about their play right now just goes to show how high they can get to when they're at their best. But the last two games, they really haven't played well. And I just thought, like, they almost gave that game away at the end, and it just was a sign of the lack of discipline they had throughout the night. How can you, as Drew Holiday, decide to go for a dunk and not absolutely have 100% certainty that you're going to make the dunk? As soon as you see Jared Jackson come over, you have to decide, all right, let me dribble this thing out. I'm going to go get fouled.
What is Drew Holiday's most famous play as Milwaukee Buck?
The alley-oop to Giannis.
In the exact same situation where he should have dribbled it out and should have gotten taken out.
He has moments of insanity from time to time.
It was an homage to Marcus Smart sitting on the bench where he took a crazy three out of nowhere, knocked it down, took another crazy three, did not make it. I think he missed a layup, got a great offensive rebound to get. Like, he did all the kind of crazy Marcus Smart things, but that decision at the end had to have been the craziest.
Joe Mazzulla, like, it's a new thing for Joe to sort of throw guys under the bus. And not that he really threw Drew under the bus, but he did say, if you're going to take that, you have to make it. And if you aren't going to make it, you just have to get fouled and make the free throws and move on. So he was mad about that decision.
What'd you think about the Tatum shot before that? Because I really liked the possession. One before that was Tatum on the post, and he turned the corner and they sent multiple guys and he found Kristaps for the dunk. And it felt like they went back to that again, but then Tatum kind of took that fadeaway, and it just, like, it didn't seem like the most, like, it kind of felt like late in the shot clock. It took him a while to get to it. I actually think Drew was kind of trying to screen for him, and Tatum was telling him to get away. But I wasn't the biggest fan of that as like kind of late offense. But it made sense just because it worked so well on the possession before.
Yeah, I just don't know why. I think Desmond Bain was guarding him on that play. And Bain is like, obviously he's several inches shorter than Jason Tatum and has some, doesn't have the longest wingspan in the league.
Negative wingspan, some would say.
But I feel like there are just other areas you can attack and just be smarter about trying to get a better shot in that situation. So I didn't love that. He faded away. He didn't give himself a chance to get fouled. Didn't give himself a chance to draw help and find somebody open. I just thought it wasn't the worst shot in the world, but he could have gotten a better one.
B-Rob, what did you think of Jason Tatum having 4 offensive fouls and a total of 8 turnovers in this game? Just the fouls in general. It was a very disjointed basketball game where it seemed like there was no rhythm, no flow.
Everybody was mad.
Seriously. Like, I don't think I've seen, like, both sides, like, the amount of offensive fouls across the whole team for this game. I think there was, like, 8 offensive fouls on the Celtics, period. But yeah, there was no rhythm, no flow from that standpoint.
Except for Hauser.
Except for Sam Hauser just burying threes left and right throughout the first half. But everything else was clunky. Even guys like Derek White, I feel like were making poor decisions that were leading off.
He made multiple bad decisions at the rim. He decided to go up with things on multiple fast breaks. It was just like, I'm calling Derek White's number. And it resulted in, I think, multiple jump balls or blocks. It was not a good Derek White game.
Really wasn't. And it's just such a rarity this year that all this kind of lined up like this, where almost everyone outside of Faye Hauser and Porzingis had a rough game offensively. And it still was enough. You know, this is a game I feel like last year they probably lose in terms of like getting away from them. They were lucky at Faye facing such a depleted Memphis team. And even with, you know, Bain and having a great night, that it's still, they didn't have enough left to get over the hump offensively and take advantage of their opportunities. But this was getting into some old habits. And I think we saw like a lot of this in the second half of last year when they were just, you know, kind of going through the motions at times, and it led them into trouble.
Yeah. And they've won 6 straight, but you do want to see them stop this stretch where they're not playing their best basketball and come out of it. And they really didn't play well against Toronto. I mean, they executed down the stretch of that game, but first quarter, they gave up a ton of layups. Third quarter, Pascal Siakam just totally mutilated them, and they were able to execute their way out of it against Memphis. Like, that's a totally depleted team with basically no offensive options.
Let's not talk about Santi Aldama like that. If he hits that shot, we're talking about this as the Santi Aldama game. Like, he could have been a hero.
They started essentially 3 big men with Aldama, Jaren Jackson, and
Biyombo.
And that's a group that the Celtics should just run off the court. They should get forced turnover after turnover. They only forced 11 turnovers against a team that didn't have a point guard on the floor at all, except Jacob Gilliard played 15 minutes, and he's.
You mean the NCAA leader in the all-time steals, Jacob Gilliard?
He had a crazy steal on Tatum.
He did
in the corner there. That was nuts.
Tatum had 8 turnovers.
Yeah, that's 4 of them were charges. One of them was a charge that was, or an offensive foul called on a pass, which legitimately, I think it definitely was a foul. Like, he launched into the defender and then realized that he didn't draw the foul and then threw a pass. But yeah, it was a bad Tatum game.
That's 2 in a row for him. In Toronto, he was just like not at all himself. I thought he was actually a little bit better today, despite the turnovers. I didn't think it was like a total zero game from him, but only 13 field goal attempts, and Memphis was kind of playing him to be that way. We can't like fault the Celtics for not passing from the rim and then be like, but Tatum should have shot more than 13 times. It's like, you can't have it both ways. And there was one play, especially at Marcus Smart. It was funny on the sideline. He was kind of yelling at the Grizzlies for the way they defended, but Tatum got to the rim. I think Jaren Jackson helped out. and Tatum threw it to Brown on the wing, and Brown just missed it. So I thought Tatum could have had a number of more assists than he did, but it's still, I mean, that's two games in a row where he hasn't been able to totally leave his imprint on the game. It was just a really bad effort. Jalen did play though, which was good after the in-season tournament court got the best of him in Toronto. Were you guys surprised that he played? Would you guys have preferred that he sat some time after dealing with some discomfort?
Yeah, I'm pretty shocked. I mean, especially with the back-to-back coming up. I guess Charlotte, I mean, he could rest tomorrow night regardless. So I guess we'll see how that plays out. But given how much he kind of played it up after the game, obviously it's obviously great news for him that he was fine and good to go. But given the opponent and the schedule, I am a little surprised that they didn't play cautiously, but Jalen likes to play when he's ready, and that's, he was clearly good to go.
Yeah. He was upset about the court. I haven't inspected the man's groin. I don't know what's going on there. I imagine if he's good to go, he's ready to go, but I'd also wouldn't be shocked to see him rest against the Hornets. I think it's tough for them to be on a back-to-back, but, you know, nice for them to be going up against the Charlotte Hornets, who presumably will be one of the worst teams in the league this year. Jalen seemed kind of frustrated tonight, where I thought he got fouled on multiple times, got a tech from just arguing. It seemed like the whole third quarter just was bad from everyone's perspective, and no one was able to really get in a rhythm there. But I don't know. No one really, other than Hauser, I don't think no one had a great performance here for the Celtics. We did see Kedda. It's the first time of Kedda, 5 minutes of Kedda, Jay. Was he as lumbering in person as he was on television?
I don't know if lumbering is the right word, but I would say that he didn't seem
good.
Yeah. Cornette's looking for his chance.
You could use that word. No, in the preseason, he seemed sure of himself. He seemed confident. Tonight, and there was one play, and in Memphis, we're like, it's one of the few places where we still sit courtside. And
oh yeah, I saw you and Himmelsbacher on the old broadcast there.
That's a beautiful thing. But one of the cool things is you can pick up on a little more of the game than you usually do. And so there was one play when Joe was calling a play from the sideline, and everyone else just kind of like understood what to do. And Kedda was just looking at him, like running down the whole court, just looking at him. And I think he was kind of like, I'm not sure what's going on right now. I don't know what play I'm supposed to be running. And so I it felt like it was just some first game jitters for Kedda, and he wasn't as sure of himself as he probably will be in the future. But it was an opportunity for him, and he did not seize it. But he'll get more opportunities, I think, this season. It was interesting though that they went with Kedda instead of Cornette.
Do you think they're saving Cornette for tomorrow against Charlotte, knowing Horford's not going to play likely?
Do you need to save Luke Cornette? Do you need to give the 5 minutes to Kedda that could have been Luke Cornette's? I don't think
a simple no would have sufficed, Jay.
That probably entered their minds. I'll be interested to see, and I don't think Horford will play because he hasn't played in back-to-backs, but he only played 22 minutes. If ever there were a time to play him on the second leg of a back-to-back, it would probably be after a light minutes load like that, even though it's Charlotte. And they don't necessarily need all of their big dogs in that one. Although maybe they do. They almost lost to the Grizzlies with basically nobody.
Yeah, I mean, the way the Hornets get up and down, I would think that, you know, you don't want to put Al through that in the second half of back-to-back. We're at, like, the minutes load have been so low for him this year that you do start to think about in these games where they do have back-to-back. It's like, okay, what number do you keep him down to on the first night? Do you feel good about playing him on that second night? And that's a decision they couldn't really have last year because they needed him to play 30 minutes in all those games, and they were kind of playing him crazy numbers minutes-wise all night, but obviously tonight less so. And then, I don't know, I feel like this year too, with like we took a kid like Lamar Stevens, I feel like Joe's also just throwing darts more this year And I kind of like that part of it. Like, especially on a night like this where nothing's going on, like nothing seems to be working. The starters are seem like they're in the mud. It's like, all right, yeah, let's try Lamar Stevens here. Let's try
fourth quarter Lamar Stevens.
Right, exactly. It's just like, and then he proceeded to, like, I feel like, mess up a transition defense sequence of Holiday and left, you know, a guy wide open to go to the rim. So he didn't necessarily help himself either. But they got these guys on the bench. You might as, you know, maybe we'll see O'Shea Brissett tomorrow night. I feel like.
Yeah, what happened to O'Shea Brissett? Is he just fallen out of favor entirely? I feel like we haven't seen him in 2 weeks now.
He played the game before the Raptors game. Who did they play there? The first game of the road trip. Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And he played okay. Right. He didn't shoot the ball well. He airmailed one from the corner. But it's a thing where, like, I don't think beyond Hauser, Horford, and Pritchard, they just don't really know what to do. And I think Cornett will probably be the answer at the next center spot most of the time. But between Stevens, Banton, Brissett, Mihailuk, there's just no separation. And they just are going to use one or the other. And I don't know if there's a rhyme or reason to it. Will be a rhyme or reason to it. It's just like whoever's night it is.
Yeah, I wonder that how much they're gonna, you know, as we get into trade season in a couple months there, if they like are gonna be, if one of those guys will emerge and like kind of take a spot consistently as that ninth or tenth guy at nights like this, or if they're gonna be kind of scouring the market for a guy like that, whether it's trade or buyout or whatever down the line, to give them that, you know, better consistency. Cause like I said, there's just, you don't know what you're getting out of those guys right now. And that's fine most nights, but ideally to take the minutes onus off, you want at least someone a little more you can trust in those spots.
Jay, this was supposed to be the grand Marcus Smart reunion game. He's obviously did not play. He has an ankle injury. He's going to be out for 3 to 5 weeks, but I assuming you got to talk to
him
pregame. You did not at all.
No, he was not in the locker room pregame. Grizzlies PR informed us that he was not going to be available after the game. So
do you feel dumb,
Marcus Smart,
for going to Memphis?
I don't feel dumb for going to Memphis. This is my job. So I was here in Memphis. One thing that I did learn, and it's in my story on The Athletic tonight that I don't know if it's published right now, but will be soon. Marcus Smart considers himself the best Jenga player ever. And Derek White was telling me about an incredible Jenga sequence where they were down to like basically the end where things start to get real dicey, where the tower starts to get real wobbly. And there was a piece that was just stuck. And he said it was him and Malcolm Brogdon. I don't know who else was playing, but everyone was hesitant. Like no one wanted to touch the block. No one wanted to pull it. No one wanted to twist it because they thought that whole thing was going down. And he said, Marcus Smart walked over and just smacked it and just smacked the one piece. And the one piece fell out. The rest of the tower stood. And Derek White was like, oh my God, like that was incredible. And so it sounds like a stupid story, but White said that Marcus thought he was the best at everything. And that White actually took some of that mindset from him and that it can be really helpful at times.
Irrational confidence is very important. I think that's one of the things that Marcus Smart brought to the table. Just his willingness to try things. And sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes I think Drew Holiday has a similar kind of mindset. We talked.
He honored him tonight with that play.
Yeah. One thing I forgot to mention, he threw probably the hardest pass as a role man to Kristaps Porzingis, just like whipped one at him. Shocking.
Porzingis like threw his left hand up there and grabbed it. Yeah.
Had to tap it in. Just Drew Holiday in a true homage to Marcus Smart was completely freelancing out there. But I do love the idea that Marcus Smart is the best Jenga player in the world. Right now, before we get into the junk, the useless observations, we're going to kick it to our friends at FanDuel for this message.
All right, let's take a break here to hear from our sponsor, FanDuel. Score early this NFL season with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 Moneyline bet. That's $150 if your team wins. So if you've been thinking about joining FanDuel, there's no better time to get in on the action. The app is easy to use. There's a wide range of betting options. You can do spreads, player props, over-unders, and much more. So visit FanDuel.com/Boston and kick off the NFL season. FanDuel, the official partner of the NFL. Massachusetts 21 and present. Hope is here. First online real money wager only. $5 pregame money line wager required. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com, gambling helpline ma.org, or call 1-800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234. And now back to the show.
And we're back. Gonna dive into the junk drawer. This is the portion of the podcast. We do this all every post-game podcast where normally I come with the useless observations. I've been trying to encourage serious journalists, Brian B. Rob, and J. El Nino King to come up with their own useless observations. We call it junk. The first thing I am going to say is that there's way too many challenges, and burning your challenge with 8 minutes left in the game is stupid, and I just don't think you should be able to use a challenge in the first half. It doesn't make any sense. It's dumb.
Yeah, that was probably one of the worst. I mean, as far as degree of, like, one of the worst challenges I've seen by the Celtics to do it, especially when it ended up being a close game. To use, they must have really thought they obviously had that play to make that challenge that early. But when you lose it 4 minutes into the game on just not even a point type decision, just on an out of bounds type stuff, that was pretty wild. And luckily, they obviously didn't need it late.
No play in the first half of any basketball game is important enough that it needs to be challenged. One of the beauties of basketball is that it's a game of runs. Things will come back. The game does not need to be stopped and slowed down and reviewed at any point. I would even say in the first three quarters. I would say in the first 43 minutes of the game. I don't think challenges should exist until the final 5 minutes of the game, until it's officially clutch time.
There was a heckler in Memphis yelling at Joe Mazzulla for the challenge. And then when the Grizzlies challenged, the heckler stood up and shouted at him, "That's how you should use a challenge."
That's good stuff.
Joe had no response, nor did he probably even notice.
I like that kind of insight you can provide us when you sit so close. Drew Carter said this on the broadcast, but the players can call the 2-2-1 press whenever they want. That was news to me.
Yeah, Joe gives them a lot of freedom. Joe gives the players a lot of freedom to basically change things on the fly, adjust on the fly. He's turned Drew Holiday, and Drew Holiday has said it's like the first time in his career he's ever had as much responsibility, basically as a signal caller of sorts for the defense. And he just kind of constantly communicates with Joe what they can do, what the options are. And so that's always been Joe's philosophy, is like empower the players as much as possible. He thinks that if he does that, they'll be more invested in the success, just because they're the ones choosing. If you're the one choosing the defensive strategy, like, it better work and you better do it right. And if you don't, then it's on you and entirely on you. So I think that's just one of the ways that Joe is a little different from some coaches. Like, he's very into giving the players some control over what goes on.
I'm going to say I'm a huge respecter of Santi Aldama's just willingness to throw ridiculous passes. Even he had a number of behind-the-back passes that worked earlier in the game, was slinging some dimes, and then even tried to do it in a tie game late. So shouts to Santi Aldama, attractive gentleman, playing good basketball.
He's a fun player. He's like one of those like inflatable balloons people that just like – all arms and legs, just floating out there, shooting threes, throwing dimes. He's got a lot of skill for someone that tall.
I did not expect the inflatable balloon comparison, but it seems
to make sense. I didn't either. That just came to me. I've never thought of that when watching Santi Aldama play basketball.
Okay, but now is where I besmirch Kenny Lofton Jr. and say him dunking is fun because he's fat. Like, that's just a good old-fashioned fun to watch in a basketball game.
Do we have to body shame him?
I thought he looked nice and trim tonight compared to earlier.
He had two dunks.
I don't know.
Yeah, and the dunks were more fun because of his girth.
I can't disagree. I love Kenny Lofton, man. That dude has a lot of game. I don't know if he'll ever become a legitimate NBA player, but he has a lot of game. And I think if he touched the ball a lot, he would score and put up buckets against any competition in the world. It might not help his team, but he'd be giving up points at the other end for sure. But
do you think he'll have a more significant moment in the NBA than his like previous moments playing Wembanyama and dominating him in international basketball?
It's going to be hard to top dominating Wembanyama, especially like when Wembanyama is going to the Hall of Fame and Kenny Lofton is, I don't know, wrapping up like a 6 or 7 year career that doesn't really amount to much. He's going to look back at that time and be like, yeah, you know what? That dude could never handle me. He's the best player ever, but he could never handle me.
So you think after 6 or 7 years, Victor Wembanyama will be entering the Hall of Fame? The timeline doesn't make sense, Jay.
The timeline was a little off. All right. When Kenny Lofton is looking back at his 6 or 7 year.
That's better framing. There are some people in the front row wearing paper hats and they look like hot dog salesmen. There's nothing. Don't respond to that. Just an observation I had. There was also an Amazon ad of these old ladies who are buy a bunch of sleds and then go down the hill, like sled down the hill. And it's just dangerous. Those old ladies are going to break a hip. They're not. It makes no sense for those old ladies to try and live out yesteryear by sledding down a hill when they're 95 years old. They're brittle bones. It's just a nonsense ad. It makes me want to use that product less.
I have no response to that.
That's fair. There was a portion of the game where it was just a total dunk fest. We had the nice Jaylen Brown and Kristaps Porzingis. Apparently they're great friends. They're becoming best friends, but they really have developed a chemistry on the court, and they've kind of realized that Kristaps Porzingis is huge and will throw him outrageous lobs. And so there's a fun stretch where he caught that lob from Jaylen Brown and then Jason Tatum dunked right on Bismack Biyombo.
That was a crazy dunk. I was not expecting that dunk. I didn't think he was going to go up for that.
And he did. And it rocked out loud. And that's all I got for my observations. Once the game got close in the end, my kind of penchant for nonsense diminished. Other than Drew Carter has turned into a solid homer after like 5 or 6 games, complaining about foul calls, complaining about the other Triple J, complaining about his foul calls. He knows what broadcast he's on. I think he's doing a solid job, filling in that Tommy Heinsohn traditional homer role. So
he was playing through difficulties tonight too.
Oh, you could hear it on the broadcast.
I was just saying, no, the I'm not sure there were any power outlets available, and his phone was running out of juice. And I think he's got notes on his phone, and he had to rush and plug it into his computer. So he was multitasking to bring the people the stats and the facts tonight. And I hope people appreciate that. He was playing through the elements.
I like that inside information, Jay. Any other observations from down there in Memphis?
The highlight of my road trip so far was talking to Peyton Pritchard about being called a crypto scammer by Drake. there was no better question, and he responded in exactly the way that I thought he would respond. Because most players, if you ask them about like a joke Drake made about them, they'd be like, yeah, that was super funny. Like I really thought that was hilarious.
And more wild that Drake knows who I am and is shouting me out on a broadcast.
Pritchard was kind of like, I don't know what a crypto scammer is, man. What do you think a crypto scammer is, man? He's like, just means I'm an average looking white guy, I think. And so it was like, and he wasn't mad about it. It was just like, but he has a chip on his shoulder. He has an edge. And that wasn't going to change just because Drake called him a crypto scammer. And he's a fan of Drake's. He didn't want to cause any beef, but also he was kind of like, I don't know what crypto scammer means, man. Probably just means I'm a white guy.
See, that's where he's wrong. He does look like a crypto scammer, and it's not just because he's an average-looking white guy. I think it's because of the haircut, and he kind of looks like Spike from Toy Story. But I would agree with Drake's assessment that he does look like a crypto scammer.
I have no response, but...
You're just an average-looking white guy.
I'm with Peyton Pritchard.
We are three average-looking white guys, and none of us look like crypto scammers. Only Peyton Pritchard does. But so that, do with that what you will.
That was probably my second favorite question I've ever asked, which was, do you think you look like a crypto scammer? And the first one was to Marcus Smart, are you about that life? After Jimmy Butler said he was not. So,
did you lead off the interview with that, Jay? To Peyton, or was there a warm up, or did you guys just go right to cut to the chase?
Himmelsbach and I were talking yesterday. We were like, we kind of want to know about the crypto scammer stuff. And so at shoot around, we both kind of looked at each other and we were like, it's time. Let's go chat with Pritchard about the crypto scammer. And highlight of my trip. I didn't write about it. I didn't even tweet about it, but it was a fantastic moment.
Yeah, you let Himmelsbach get the exclusive on that. You had a personal moment for yourself, but you let Himmelsbach.
It was only about the experience. That's all I needed. It was not about the work. I just needed to know personally what Peyton Pritchard thought about getting called a crypto scammer on an NBA broadcast.
Is Memphis, just going for more junk here for you, being in front of, you think Memphis is the best seat in the league right now for media? Like, do you get the most out of that? I feel like what's like only a few spots left you actually get like that close to the court.
Yeah, I don't know how many spots. Like, it used to be the Spurs had it. It used to be the Thunder had it.
I don't know if Phoenix still has it.
Dallas, I believe, still does.
Orlando lets you sit baseline courts.
Yeah, Orlando's baseline. Yeah.
Lakers are baseline. Clippers, I believe, are baseline as well.
Yeah. Same building, so yeah.
But it's one of the few places in the league where you can sit close enough to the bench where you can hear some of the things that Joe Mazzulla is saying. And to me, like, that just adds to the experience. It adds to the details. When they got beat to two offensive rebounds in a row in that one stretch, I think it was in the third quarter, Mazzulla called timeout and just was fuming. He said something like, if I remember it correctly, it was, we just got beat to two motherfucking loose balls. And so stuff like that you don't get otherwise. And it just adds color to the experience. It adds to kind of what you're able to understand, I guess.
Here's a random question that I was talking with Corrales and Soichi with last home game. If I won the lottery, would the Celtics let me buy season tickets at the seat directly next to basically where Jason Tatum sits on the bench and just live tweet the whole game? Do you think they would allow me to do that if I had the money?
I'm sure there's a number on it.
Because I there's nothing to stop me from tweeting out everything, every piece of shit talking the players say, everything Joe Mazzulla says. I don't think I would, you know, out of loyalty to the team, but like, if I had all the money in the world, I'd want to be right there and so I could be as close as the game as possible.
You probably wouldn't hear like too much stuff. Like it'd be a great experience. You'd be able to hear some trash talk. You'd be able to hear some strategic talk. But I don't think it would be like something where the Celtics would get mad at you about sharing a lot of the stuff. There probably aren't as many moments as you think where like guys just cross the line.
I guess there's only one way to find out. I need to become exceedingly wealthy.
Yeah, it's time for you to become a rich, rich lawyer.
Not the type of law I want to get into, but I could sell out and pivot. Who knows? Who knows if I get a job or not? B-Rob, any other junk? Jay, any other junk before we wrap this thing up?
I got nothing. I'll defer to the front row man.
Have you had any barbecue in Memphis? Have you listened to any 3-6 Mafia while there?
I went to a New Orleans style cuisine restaurant.
You get a po' boy?
I got blue crab ravioli. And it was delicious.
Okay. That's where we're going to wrap it up, folks. Thank you, guys. Everyone who's been...
You can't appreciate good seafood? You can't appreciate seafood pasta?
Yeah, when I think of good seafood, I think of middle of the country, Memphis. Memphis, the king of seafood. No. All right.
It was delicious.
For Jay King in Memphis, for B-Rob from MassLive.com, that's going to do it for us folks here on Still Potable. If you won't like what you hear, please subscribe. Go to Patreon.com/StillPotable. We'll have 4 more episodes for the rest of the week. We'll be with you after the Charlotte Hornets game. We'll be with you after the Milwaukee Bucks game. And we'll preview the in-season tournament game, like a 3:30 tip-off against the Orlando Magic. Who knows? We might even be after that one. We're doing bonus content. Jay put out a great video breakdown after the Raptors game on Friday night. We're putting out a lot of content on the Patreon, so subscribe today. Patreon.com/StillPotable. And shouts to Amit for producing this podcast, running the ads for us here on CLNS. And thank you guys for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. This is Still Potable. Oh, I got to do the Kristaps point and wink.